Lightly on the Ground Radio, produced at Richmond Independent Radio and broadcast on WRIR LP 97.3 FM and worldwide at WRIR.org. We're exploring our food system, which includes everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide fronts. We focus on the factors that each guest brings to growing and sustaining our food system and our civilization. And so while we're talking local, the ideas are pertinent to any food system. I am Sunny Gardner, and our guest today in the live room at Richmond Independent Radio is Jack Bricker, our state conservationist. Welcome, Jack. Thank you for coming.
Well, Sunny, it's great to be here today. Thank you for inviting me out.
Well, state conservationist, what do you do with your time?
Well, that's a great question. My family often asks me that as well. I should probably talk a little bit first about the organization that I work for, the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We're part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Our mission is to work with private landowners throughout the country, as well as throughout the state of Virginia, providing technical and program services to get conservation on the ground. We provide our engineering, science-based services, and they're provided on a voluntary basis. We're non-regulatory. As the state conservationist, I manage the corporate affairs of the organization of the Natural Resources Conservation Service here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I have about 180 employees throughout the state, mostly located in 41 field offices to provide that engineering and technical service to landowners, predominantly farmers and ranchers in the state. My job, though, I'm located here in Richmond, and I make sure that we stay on budget and have the technical experts hired to deliver our programs.
All right. So is part of your job to actually make recommendations concerning conservation?
That's what my staff, field staff, does on a day-to-day basis. They still make house calls. They work one-on-one with farmers and ranchers throughout the state. First, they want to know what the objectives and needs of that rancher or farmer are. They put together a conservation plan that takes those objectives into consideration, and that plan addresses the resource concerns that may be on that farm, soil concerns, water quality concerns, wildlife concerns, energy and air as well. We basically look at soil, water, air, plant, and animal resources. We walk the farm with that individual, identifying those resource concerns and where improvements could be made, and those are documented in our plan. And the next step then would be get the conservation on the ground. And one of the ways we do that is we offer financial assistance to help defer the cost of the conservation practices that are installed.
Talk about that a little bit. Give us some examples.
Well, our major or our flagship program is what we call EQIP, the Environmental Qualities Incentive Program. This year we have about $19 million available to landowners. After the plan is developed and the resource concerns are identified, my resource professionals make recommendations of the practices that need to be installed, designed, and engineered, and we'll pay up to 75% of the cost of design and installation to get those practices on the ground.
Well, how does someone avail themselves of the financial resources that are available through your programs?
Well, we have 41 field offices throughout the state. We can be found online at the Natural Resources Conservation Service or in your phone book. Our 41 service centers are open daily. And an individual would come in and make an appointment with our district conservationist or soil conservationist technician. We would go out to their place of business and make our evaluation. Once it was determined what was needed, they would simply fill out an application. We take applications throughout the year for our EQIP, Environmental Qualities Incentive Program, and we have various evaluation or ranking periods throughout the year where then we determine those high-ranking priority practices and fund those first. This year, we've already received our financial assistance for the year. Once again, it's nearly $19 million.
Well, I thought that the Farm Bill was still tied up in Congress. How did that work?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure of all the dealings that have went on in Capitol Hill, but I was surprised that we got our money as early as we did. Congress and the Office of Management and Budget feel that our work is a priority and important. They didn't want to delay that, so we have gotten a budget already this year to begin to work with private landowners getting conservation on the ground.
Hmm. Well, one of the concerns that I've heard about the Farm Bill lagging in being passed is that we would actually not have funding for a lot of programs that small farmers have come to depend on, or at least to think about, because some people are put off by the amount of paperwork it takes to apply for a grant through Southern Sustainable Agriculture Working Group or Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education. But it sounds like this is easier to apply for, and you also have line items for things that small farms might be interested in, like energy and the organic ones and the high tunnels. That's always a hot issue.
Yeah, our EQIP has dedicated funding. We have a pool of EQIP funds that are for general conservation purposes. And as you mentioned, Sunny, we also have them for specific purposes, such as energy conservation, high tunnel, and organic farming as well. But you ask an interesting question. You know, we do have our EQIP funding, but some of our other programs are tied up until the passage of the Farm Bill. And once that's passed, I suppose we will get our funding for those programs later in the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Put a face on some of this money.
Well, once again, we try to do a lot of awareness building. We hold a lot of meetings. We do a lot of outreach to make sure that the producers, the farmers and ranchers in a given service area realize and understand the programs that are available to them. Mm-hmm. Typically, we like to start off with that conservation plan. That is the basis to make those good natural resource decisions. Once we understand the objectives and the needs of that farmer and we understand the resource concerns, then we can better tailor the financial assistance to get that conservation on the ground. We establish those relationships, and they're not done overnight. It takes a long time to build that trust up between the producer and the staff that's working with them. And once those goals are determined, we have a fairly straightforward application process where they can sign up for funding. They're ranked and rated against everybody else in their community. And through that process, we will fund the highest ranking applications first. Typically, we are oversubscribed. $19 million may seem like a lot of money, but typically we'll get 2 to 3 times the request for funding that we can actually fund. So there is a ranking process involved, so we get the highest priority applications funded first.
Mm-hmm. Are there dates when people need to be doing things?
Yes. Although we do have continuous sign-up, it's important that we do have ranking periods, or what we call batching periods. The first period will be January 18th. That's when we'll make our first evaluation of those contracts or contracts that are seeking funding at that point. We'll have subsequent batching periods, February 15th and March 15th. Mm-hmm. Usually, as we go through 2 or 3 cycles, we'll spend our money down fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And then we'll wait for the next year to get additional funding.
Now, does it have to be landowners, or could someone who's renting a farm apply?
It could be somebody who's renting a farm. We have a lot of that. We have a lot of absentee landowners throughout the state of Virginia. And those folks that have rental contracts and show that they have control of the land are eligible for these programs as well. So it's just not landowners, but those that are also renting the land would be eligible.
Does it have to be, is it families, or can groups of people,
Yes, that's once again, it's control of the land. If they can show that they have a rental agreement for the length of the period of the contract, then we're able to enter into that contract with them and work with them. The requirement is that you have to be an agricultural producer. It could be forestry, it could be row cropping, it could be grazing, and you have to have at least $1,000 of sales per year to qualify as an agricultural producer. There are some exceptions. If you're a new beginning farmer, you may not have that track record, but you still qualify. Or if you're a forest land producer in the timber business, you may not have annual sales. It may be on a 5 or 6 year cycle, but you would also be qualified as well.
Agriculture is our major industry. I think is it $79 billion we bring in a year?
I believe between forestry and general agriculture, it's around $70-80 billion a year.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is a movement afoot to lift a 30-year-old ban on uranium mining right in the middle of Virginia, in a rather agricultural area. As state conservationist, has the NRCS or your offices taken a position on that?
Actually, no. We generally don't take positions on those types of issues. Mm-hmm. Of course, being living here in Virginia, it's of interest to me. I think that it's one of those things that I haven't studied probably at the level that I need to, but I know there's a lot of concerns both for and against the uranium mining. But as far as the organization goes, we typically don't take those types of positions mm-hmm. on those types of activities. We'll leave that up to the state regulatory agency who's ever in charge to make those determinations.
Okay. Another hard issue that people are asking me about, just because I talk to a lot of people, I think, is the idea of genetically engineered seeds and GE crops and what people commonly call GMOs once they're into the grocery stores. There is some danger to organic growers and to open pollinated seed growers from these GE crops. As a say that there's like $250,000 available for organic practices here in the EQIP program, would that might be money be available to help someone protect their seed crop, for example?
Most of the money that we have for under our organic program is to help people make that transition from traditional farming into organic farming. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the issues that you would talk with the genetically modified crops, that funding isn't really influenced one way or another by that. Mm-hmm. But we are trying to make folks become more sustainable. One of those ways would be through organic farming, and those that choose to go that course will help them with that transition to make sure that they can get their USDA certification as an organic producer.
Mm-hmm. Is there money in those programs available for people who would be certified under a different program other than the NOP?
My understanding of the program right now is they would have to have that USDA certification to participate in the program. And I know there's a lot of different certification processes out there, and we're relatively new in the organic funding game, if you will. This is probably our third year. And like most program offerings, they evolve over time, and hopefully this will evolve and make it easier for people to get in the door. And maybe in the future, I don't know for sure, but other certifications may be recognized at some point down the road.
What type of energy programs might someone be looking at if they were going to apply for EQIP funds?
Yeah, one of the subsets of EQIP is our energy program, and that's another relatively new offering. And what we do there, we'll make an evaluation not only of their headquarters or their operation, if they're a dairy, but look over the entire farm and ways they can become more efficient in their use of energy. We look at things as simple as their lighting that they're using, but a lot of times farmers use a lot of electricity, a lot of generators, pumps, and we'll provide funding for them after we complete an energy audit, which is very similar to a conservation plan, of how to improve their energy uses by purchasing new equipment. And that energy funding can be used not only for the audit, but helping offset some of the cost of transitioning to more efficient equipment, particularly electrical equipment for generators, lighting, that sort of thing.
So if someone wanted to put solar panels on top of their chicken house?
That would be something that we would look at, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, there are alternatives out there. Once again, being a new program, I think there's going to be more and more latitude, more and more opportunities over time as we become a better, our own knowledge and our own technical expertise increases in the area of energy and energy efficiency.
And I would think that the demand placed on that knowledge bank would be partly influenced by who's asking you for what.
What?
So the farmers are out there going, let's see, there's EQIP money. Maybe I can try this. And then they talk to their conservation officer.
Exactly. And it is a challenge for us. I mean, we're traditionally trained for production agriculture. But as we get into some of these other areas of organics and high tunnel and energy, it does stretch my staff to become more technically savvy or have a technical expertise in those areas as well. And the organization itself has to grow into it. We make these offerings, and as I said, these offerings evolve over time. We improve, we learn a lot, and we understand more what the need is out there, and we can design a program that'll fit the need of the agricultural producer, not only here in Virginia, but across the country.
Mm-hmm. So there's close to $20 million in the EQIP program. Is that, what portion of your budget is that?
Right now, with the budget that I've been offered, it's about 65%.
Wow.
So the majority of the funding that I've received to date, in the absence of a farm bill, is for our largest flagship cost share program, the EQIP, the Environmental Qualities Incentive Program.
Well, that sounds like, that's dynamite. I think we could do a lot with that. Because, you know, it's not like the farmers are going to be asking for $1 million apiece.
No, and there's limits on how much they can ask. There's certain caps that they can't exceed. Under a traditional farm bill, the last farm bill is an individual producer couldn't receive more than $300,000 over the life of the farm bill. Mm-hmm. We don't know how that's going to play out in the next farm bill. That could go up or down. But right now, in this point of transition, we really don't have that cap in place at this point.
Well, let's take a break and listen to some music. We're going to hear some Appalachian Spring, which should be coming up within the next 2 or 3 months. And that was Jack's request. And in our studio today is Jack Bricker, our state conservationist, the head of the NRCS, which is?
The Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Thank you. I always want to say national resources because they are national resources.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay, we'll be back in a minute. General conservation ideas. What is the root of all this? What's at the basis of what we're working on here?
Trying to be good stewards of the land, you know, have a conservation ethic. I think we have a strong conservation ethic in this country, and we want to continue that. We're always getting turnover in land ownership. New farmers and ranchers are coming in to the system all the time. Some of them don't have broad or varied backgrounds, so we always have a new clientele to work with. As land changes hands. And so that's really the mission of this organization, is to make sure that we have clean water, clean air, healthy, productive soil.
And do you have programs that particularly support that, soil?
Well, our general technical assistance is our key, and then, of course, we have our financial assistance programs that complement that. In the past, we have looked at what we call T, how much soil loss can take place on a given acre of land to remain productive. Most of our soils in Virginia are around 4 tons per acre, we estimate. And that may sound like a lot, Sonny, but actually 4 tons an acre is the thickness of a dime over an acre. So it's not very thick. And that doesn't mean it's leaving the farm. That means it's just being moved within that field. Mm-hmm. But as population grows and the demands for food, fiber, and feed increase, we really need to go beyond sustainable. We're going to have more and more people to feed. We have a hungry world of over 7 billion people now, and that's going to ever increase. So we're looking at soil health as the next step in conservation, going beyond sustainable. And what we're doing is through our conservation systems, particularly with cover crop, we've learned a lot. And what we've learned is a multi-seed cover crop will get us beyond sustainable, actually begin to add more organic matter to the soil, make that soil a sponge. What we're trying to do is mimic nature. And in doing so, you can use fewer inputs. So you'll save money, but you'll be losing less fuel, less fertilizer, less herbicide, pesticide, which means we'll have cleaner water, cleaner air, better wildlife habitat. So this whole soil quality movement is really new. It's really exciting. It's going beyond sustainable.
And how are you helping to grow that system, that process?
Well, through our conservation education, working one-on-one with landowners, working with small groups, providing training, not only to our external clients, but also internally to our staff. The key here to this soil health movement really is that multi-seed cover mix. There hasn't been a lot of university research done on it, but what we've seen is very exciting. We don't know of all the soil chemistry and all the things that are happening out there, but we know it's of a great benefit. It's once again, producers are going to be able to grow more food with fewer inputs, which is going to be a benefit not only to their bottom line, but to the health of the environment.
So a lot of what we're talking about, I'm picturing rural. I'm picturing vast fields or nifty gardens in the crevices of valleys. And is any of this funding going to urban agriculture?
Not at this point. I think our high tunnel program is probably the closest thing to that. Once again, you have to have a certain limit, as I mentioned. It's not that high, $1,000. But if you are producing $1,000 worth of agricultural products, you would be eligible. This, of course, is a farm bill program, so that has its certain connotation that we're going to be working with mainstream agricultural producers. But we will work with folks that are meet the definition of agriculture concern, a farmer, and those funds can be used anywhere. So, yes, I think in the future you'll see more and more smaller acreage producers probably closer to cities. Mm-hmm. Of course, this helps us because of the transportation costs that are involved. Once again, we often talk about watersheds, but I think this whole concept of a food shed and getting your food local is really important. And as transportation and fuel costs increase, you'll probably see greater and greater emphasis on local production.
We are. We definitely are already.
And once again, our programs evolve over time. So as the needs of our clients change, our programs will change and adapt to meet those needs. We have a farm bill every 5 years. We have usually significant program changes every farm bill. Mm-hmm. And I think that really is a benefit because we evolve with the needs of our clients.
It seems like a very nimble organization in that besides the farm bill things, you have this EQIP program that the categories are pretty wide.
As you said, we have a $19 million program. About $11.7 million of that are for EQIP General, which funds the majority of our base conservation activities. Mm-hmm. You also hit it on the head when you talked about nimble. As an organization, we provide this conservation system assistance one-on-one. We still make house calls. We go out and work with that producer, and we have the latitude of state conservationists to try to develop programs that will work best in the state that we're in. Of course, a large country as the United States, things vary from coast to coast, east to west, north to south. So we want to remain nimble to make sure that we're providing the best conservation program and technical assistance to the folks in our region.
And that's pretty challenging because Virginia has every ecosystem on the planet practically.
Absolutely. And that comes back to those individual conservation professionals in those 41 service centers. Those folks, many of them stay 20, 25 years in that location, and they do become the expert in that locality in the state. Because when you work in a state with the geography and the environment as varied as Virginia, you really want those local contacts to have those years of experience so they can gain that local knowledge and have that local expertise. Mm-hmm. That's key to the success of this organization. Our folks become members of the community. They become well-respected, and they raise their children in these communities. They work side by side with these folks. They go to the same grocery store. They go to the ball game with these people. And they become that respected conservationist professional. And that doesn't happen over a year or two. You know, when I lose a 30-year professional, it's hard to fill that back right away. We bring a young, talented person in, but that credibility takes several years to establish.
Mm-hmm. You know, that just brings to mind so strongly the sad early demise of Andy Hankins, who was a Virginia Cooperative Extension alternative agriculture specialist who influenced so many people all around the region. He taught people how to grow organic food and told a lot of people about going to the NRCS to get some of this EQIP money and taught people how to grow ginseng and cut flowers and everything. And I just want to remind everyone that his legacy is going on, and there seems to be a tight bond between the Conservation Service and Extension, also, because they're both in the communities and they're both out there. They know each other in those communities. And they're both such good resources for people who are trying to figure out how to best use what they're gifted with.
Yes. A loss like Andy's is always tough on the conservation community. And you're right. There's so much conservation work that needs to take place out there. There's not one organization that has enough funding or enough staff resources to do it all. So conservation really is a team effort and takes partnerships from the federal, the state, to the local level to make it successful.
Yes, and all those individuals out there who are wondering, how am I going to build that high tunnel so I can have some season extension and grow lettuce like that person next to me? Yeah. It's just great opportunities that y'all are offering.
Yeah, and as once again, back on the partnership thing I mentioned, we have a lot of new opportunities all the time through farm bills and special funding. It is a challenge for my staff to gain that technical expertise, but working with Extension, working with various state agencies, whether Department of Fish and Game for Wildlife Service help or the Department of Forestry for Forest help, my staff can call on those resource experts to get that little bit of extra knowledge to make the best plan possible for the landowner.
Well, Jack Bricker, this has been a real pleasure. I appreciate your taking time out right before the holidays to come in and record a show that's going to be broadcast during the holidays. You may not even get to hear it live, but that's okay. And you are our state conservationist, and I feel very comfortable knowing that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. I certainly appreciate the opportunity and the invite now to come down and be able to speak with you today.
Right. So everybody out there, listen up. It's the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and there is funding for small projects all over our state. And you go to your local NRCS office and ask about it. It's in the phone book. And it's also at va.nrcs.usda.gov. Thanks again. You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio, which is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR-LP FM 97.3 and WRIR.org. You can befriend us on Facebook by joining the Lightly on the Ground Radio group, so you will know who will appear on the show and when podcasts such as this become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rabblemouth. I hope you'll join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming, Jack.
Thank you. Appreciate it.